you know, it really works. And I think there's genuine surprise when people go, I couldn't see how meditation and stand-up comedy was going to work, but it does work. Because I know it does sound like I'm mixing, you know, MMA with flower arranging.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we have a very special guest, comedian, TV presenter, and mindfulness expert, Dermot Whelan, is with us. Bean, are you ready?
Super ready.
Let's do it. Hey, hey! Bean! There's three of us on the screen today.
So fun. It's a sandwich.
Dermot, welcome!
Maury and Melissa and all your wonderful listeners, thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm a genuine fan. Maury, I loved your book. I'm loving your guys' work, and I love the joy and fun and crack, as us Irish like to say, that you're bringing to it. That's not the narcotic. That's the general sense of Emerald Isle fun.
But sometimes we also like to do crack. So
yeah, sometimes it does sound like we're doing crack.
Whatever gets you through.
Dermot, thank you. Dermot and I had the pleasure of meeting on your podcast, the Mindful Podcast. And I said to you, you have to come talk to me and Bean because we are so aligned in so many ways. So thank you for taking the time. Are you in Dublin right now?
I am. I'm in a little village called Howth, which is in North County Dublin. A little fishing village. It is your sort of quintessential harbor with the fishing boats and fish shops and a little marina and a yacht club. And I'm making it sound very elegant. It's probably, if you've ever seen those TV shows, they're kind of set in the heart of Alaska. And it's just a lot of people walking around freezing, walking into a strong breeze.
Is that where you live? Sounds so lovely. Is that where you live?
It's kind of like that, but it is. It's a lovely part of the world. I get to see a lot of the sea, which I find really helps my mood and all that good stuff. So yeah, I'm pretty lucky to be here.
That is sounds so picturesque and also very cold. You know what it reminded me of? Have you seen Eurovision, the movie with Will Ferrell?
Yes.
Yeah. It reminded me of where they live.
In Iceland.
That's one of my favorite movies. I think it's so underrated. It's brilliant.
It is. It's fantastic. Yes, it is. But you're bang on. We're not quite Iceland, but it is pretty icy. And it is a national pastime for Irish people to complain about the weather, which would suggest that at some point in our lives, the weather was good. And now we're all disappointed that it's changed. It's always been terrible. And my wife and I went into the city center of Dublin today with our eldest who started university, and we went in to see what he was doing in there and get a little tour. And we just spent the whole time walking around like a miserable old couple complaining about, how is it so cold? Oh, great, it's raining now. I should have brought my hat. I knew it. I left the hat on the front seat of the car. So we had to stop ourselves there and go, we sound like crazy pensioners. Let's back up for a minute.
No, but I really do think that it's such a inconvenience when you're trying to just, especially if you're visiting somewhere, I think your brain tells you you're on vacation or you're supposed to have this like lovely, warm, sunny time. And I think we get even more agitated, especially as we get older, that we have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, especially with Irish rain, which can hit you from any angle. We're famous for our sideways rain. So it can actually come up from underneath your jumper and come out of your collar. It's incredibly talented, Irish rain. It really is.
It's magic.
It needs to be seen to be believed.
Well, Dermot, I mean, I feel like you've already given us so many great stories, but you know that we like to kick things off with a cringer delight. And since you're such an amazing storyteller, will you do the honors and start? Do you have a cringer, a delight from your week besides the rain?
Do you know what? It's a cringe housed in delight. So let me explain. I was doing a tour from January right up until a couple of weeks ago. It's my Busy and Wrecked tour, which tries to help people to de-stress and feel less busy and less overwhelmed by mixing it with stand-up comedy and just having a good time with a lot of people in theaters. So it was tremendous fun, but as you know, doing that kind of thing could be a little bit tiring and preoccupying. So I went skiing with my two boys. They're 18 and 17, and we went to Austria. So we just took a week, and it was just the most wonderful way to stop thinking about work, you know, or anything that's going on, because you're just thinking, you know, I just need to not break my legs or blow out my knee, you know?
Right. Yep. Especially at this age when you're sliding down a mountain.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it was a beautiful time. And actually, we went to a small Austrian village where we were staying in the Alps. It's famous for its natural thermal pools. So it's a place that a lot of sick people gravitate towards as well, because the water is meant to have very powerful healing abilities and all that. So long story short, every day after skiing, we went to this place called the Alpentherm, which was this thermal water center with saunas and steam rooms and just lots of that good stuff. However, the thing about Austrian saunas and spas and steam rooms is that they're mixed gender and everybody takes their clothes off. Okay. So you very much have to park your Irish Catholic, shyness or resistance to nudity in general and embrace the pasty white physique and just go for it. And because I had my two sons, I had to sort of hide my embarrassment and do the dad thing of kind of, come on, guys, don't be ridiculous. You know, we're not going to miss out on this opportunity just because of a little bit of embarrassment, you know. And so they sort of followed along, fair play to them. And but anyway, obviously, if you're sitting in that environment, it's everyone feels quite vulnerable. So actually, it's fine, but nobody's really talking to each other. So I was sitting in the steam room, sort of hiding, lurking in the shadows, away in the corner, and this very attractive woman comes in the door and sits down right beside me, and I was like, okay, I'm just gonna ignore everything that's happening and think about every sporting statistic I can think of from the last 30 years. And then I could see that she was sort of trying to catch my eye out of the corner of my eye. And I was like, please, God, don't talk to me. Don't talk to me. I have no clothes on. I'm not ready for a conversation. And so then eventually she said, are you Dermot Whelan? And I went, oh, okay. So she's not German. She's very clearly Irish. And I was like, yes. And she goes, I've read your book. I'm a big fan of your work.
Oh my God.
And I was like, this is the worst place in the world for this conversation. What part of you thinks this is the time to spark up this chat? Could you not wait until you saw me on the road outside? Or so eventually I just had to go, thank you very much. Can we continue this when I have clothes on? And she's, yeah, okay. Lovely to meet you. Bye. Anyway, so it was just one of those weird interactions that was very, very cringy. And so I mean,
you can't make that up, Dermot. That's like a scene from a movie.
But, you know, you talk about boundaries so well in Higher Self, Maury. You know about this. And it was just a beautiful example of how some people just have no boundaries, that you're like, hey, there's that guy I recognize. He's completely naked and vulnerable. I should start talking to him about his work now while he's on his holidays.
So am I. Like, I'm also naked and I don't care. So I'm just going to strike up this conversation. It's wild. I honestly think, first of all, that is the best story we've gotten on Signal yet. But I always think, like, God, how free to be that, clueless. Like, she's not bothering herself with all the shouldn'ts and can'ts. She's just coming right at you in the naked sauna. Wow.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. And I think it's quite freeing. And you realize how many of our social rules are sort of just there, and the minute everyone decides to do something else, you can actually slot into that fairly quickly. And you know, yeah, within a little while, we were comfortable, and you know, it was fine. It seemed quite normal.
Yeah.
But they used to have these sauna rituals. I don't know if you've ever come across them, where somebody comes in and starts burning sage and all these wonderful herbs and things, and then they have this very dramatic way of sort of flapping their towels, okay, just in case you
thank you for clarifying that.
But yeah, they do this sort of very dramatic sort of wafting with a towel, and they throw the towel up and spin it like pizza dough, and then they catch it, and they do that, so, and then they waft this incredible heat right into your face, and people are passing out left, right, and center. But it was really interesting. But it was a great week. But
I need you to, you're going to write this into your next set, please. Right?
Maybe a chapter on boundaries, maybe in the next book.
No, this is just a great joke for your stand-up. Dean, how are you going to top this story? Do you have a cringe or a delight?
Please. I have a cringe, but it's like not. I wish I went first. It's like nothing near, honestly. And one of them's really superficial is I got a haircut yesterday. And you know, when you probably can't understand, Dermot, but when you get a haircut and they do it really amazingly, and then the next day you just, you can't, everyone struggles with the same thing. You just can't do it. Like what?
You never get bangs. Don't ever get bangs again.
These aren't bangs. They're just like longer pieces, you know, Dermot? They're so long. Like, what is that? Where are they? I don't know. I can't do it. But my cringe, although you already know, Dermot, I don't really know if this is a cult. Like, I'm going to tell you, my in-laws are Israeli. They're visiting.
Oh, my God. I was hoping you were going to talk about your in-laws today.
They're visiting for 2 weeks. Middle Eastern people like to just come and stay for long periods of time.
Okay. Hold on a minute. As the resident Middle Eastern person, I'm going to say
true?
That is true. It is completely accurate.
So why did you act so offended? It's accurate.
Yeah.
So they came. I wasn't even privy to anything going on, but my mother-in-law comes out to me and says, when you go upstairs, I just want to show you something. And I said, what do you need? I'm happy to grab it. You tell me what you need. And she said, oh, I just want to show you. So we were shot. They've been using my kid's bathroom. Excuse my dog's barking. They've been using my kid's bathroom. And I think they couldn't reach the towel hook on the side or something. So my father-in-law decided that he was just going to hammer holes into my wall to put up a hook to make it more accessible for everybody. He only stopped midway because my husband heard the banging and went in and said, hey, buddy, what are you doing? And he said, I'm putting up a hook because you can't reach your towels. That's the end of my cringe.
I was trying to explain to Melissa via text, Dermot, that us Middle Easterners don't talk about boundaries, have very good ones in our children's homes, because we think everything is super helpful. Like, it's like, I'm being really helpful. How are they ever going to reach these towels? I'm going to just make a hole in this wall without checking with them. Because it's helpful.
I wish people came to my house and did voluntary DIY. I would love that.
Ask me first, 100%. They did a lot of other things that they asked permission, and I was like, let's do it. But the holes in the wall without the permission felt a little like I was vandalized.
Fair.
At least the holes were just to hang things up with. It wasn't sort of, I've just put a hole in the wall so that I can watch you sleep. And it's... It could be worse.
I would almost prefer that.
Wow. No. I was going to say, doesn't that context help you? But I guess not. Okay, we're going to move on because we have a million questions for Dermot. I'm just going to say I have a delight. I'm going to just top your cringes with a delight. And it made me think of you, Dermot. I was in San Diego last weekend with my husband. We were having felt like a honeymoon because all our kids were away for spring break, which was amazing. So the two of us just left and went to San Diego. And my friend Alok, who is a comedian and performer and poet, was performing. And I was at lunch with them before their performance in San Diego. And they're like, hey, what do you think about getting on stage and doing a mass visualization of higher self and like just grounding everyone in mindfulness? And I was like, no. And they're like, okay. And then I went to the bathroom and I heard my intuition, my higher self being like, didn't you say, give me the stage, I'll get on it to spread this message? I was like, oh shit, I have to do this. So I went back.
Like, shut
and I'm
up.
Like, Alok, are you serious? They're like, yeah. I'm like, it's a comedy show. And they were like, so? And I'm like, and then I thought about how we're talking to you this week. And I was like, well, people can combine this shit. Dermot's doing it. I'm going to get up there and do some mindfulness before this comedy show. So anyway, I got on stage and did a breathing exercise with 1,000 people who are waiting to see a comedy show, and they were lovely about it.
You slayed.
Amazing. I'm giving you a round of applause for that.
Thank you. You inspired me, honestly, really.
Oh, well done. It is powerful stuff. I know that when I started to begin to weave this stuff into my comedy, it didn't go down well all the time. I do remember an MC coming on, like when I had done my bit, I had done a breathing exercise in my routine, and then I came off, and then the MC went back on, and came back off, and he's like, never do that again. They're all asleep and nobody wants to laugh. So I realized that you have to be careful about how you bring the energy up and down, because particularly if, you know, if it's your own show, fine. But if there's other comedians on the bill, they may not want the audience sleepy and snoozy and thinking of their inner child. They want them kind of drunk and ready to laugh, you know.
So I'm not thinking.
That's fair.
It's a delicate balance.
So help us get to this point in your career, in your life, where you decide to do this. So can you just fill in our audience? You have been a TV presenter and you had a career in, you know, you had your own show. Talk to us about that. And then why the change? What happened to make you change course? Or not change course, but alter course?
Yeah, well, that, I guess to a lot of people, certainly here, it seems like I made a big jump after 21 years of a radio show was my primary job. I did a show called Dermot and Dave for over 20 years. And I left at the height of our success, basically. Our ratings had never been higher. And I went and told my poor, long-suffering co-host, I'm out of here. I'm going to teach people to meditate. He's like, huh?
He probably needed to meditate in that moment.
Yeah, he's doing good, though. In fact, our ratings went up after I left. So, you know, that's showbiz.
Selling. Sorry.
Yeah. But I guess my own story began in 2007. So I was not long into stand-up at that point, and I was going to perform at a comedy festival that was really important to me, and it was a big deal. And there were my comedy heroes performing at that festival. I was going to be sharing a stage with them. Bill Murray from Ghostbusters, was going to be there, and all my favorite UK and Irish comics. And I had a panic attack while driving to the festival, which I had never had before. I didn't know what it was. I thought I was dying. And then I had to pull the car over and was gasping for breath. And an ambulance came and they put me in the back of the ambulance. And I was lucky that they had a piece of life-saving equipment that day that I really needed. It was called a brown paper bag. That's what I needed. I was hyperventilating and they told me, you've had an anxiety attack. And they said, do you have a stressful job? And I said, I'm a stand-up comedian. And they went, okay. And they all blessed themselves. but I guess, you know, I didn't learn my lesson right there and then. In fact, I went to the festival in the ambulance, got my heart checked in the local hospital, and then went out and did 3 stand-up gigs and used the panic attack for material. So I guess we're human and it takes us a little while to learn these lessons. But that sent me on gave me an awareness that maybe I needed to make friends with my nervous system a bit and educate myself about stress and how I was navigating it, because the only stress management tools I knew were, you know, beer and Marlboro Lights, and that's what I was leaning into, because that's what I learned from the grown-ups around me. So I ended up quite by chance meeting a woman who wanted me to MC her book launch. She had written a novel and she asked me to just be the host of it. And from chatting to her, I found out she taught meditation to the police force here. They're called the Gardaí, or the guards. And I had never heard kind of meditation and law enforcement in the same sentence. Right. At that time was very, I guess, woo out there. You know, as a stand-up, you're literally paid to kind of be cynical about these kinds of things and make fun of them or find the fun in them. And I guess that kind of opened my eyes, and I knew that I needed something, because I was aware I was drinking too much and partying a bit hard, and I had small kids. And you know, there's moments in your own book, Maury, when you talk about your first husband, and I got kind of a weird feeling in my gut, because I thought, you know, that could have been a road that I could have taken, you know, and those sort of incidents where you're partying and you do something silly or you hurt yourself and you're thinking, oh God, I'm not doing that again. And then you find yourself being pulled back into that trap. Yeah. So I knew I needed something. So I started to meditate. This wonderful lady called Siobhan, who's now a friend, taught me how to meditate with through Deepak Chopra's primordial sound meditation. That was her training. So I immediately connected with it. It was just something that kind of clicked. And I was like, oh, this is what I've been looking for. But I've been looking for it in all the wrong places. I've just been looking for something to quieten my mind and stop that inner critic giving me such a hard time. And, you know, beer will do that. That first half pint is a sweet spot. And I noticed that my, you know, my little annoying voice would calm down. But then you're chasing that for the rest of the night or the following night or however many nights you want to do it. So something clicked. So I guess I began to meditate and you know what we always do when we find something that really works for us, that literally changes our life? We stop doing it.
Stop doing it.
Yeah.
Of course.
We're like, see that thing? See that thing that was such an amazing thing that totally transformed me? I'm never doing that again, okay?
Yeah, I'm totally fixed. That's it.
You're like, hey, life-saving gift? I'll take it from here. Thank you very much. You know, I you think so you're all that. So I guess, you know, I was talking about meditation and I was recommending meditation, but truth be told, I had let it drift. And in 2017, I found myself back stressed out, burnt out. And I had a moment where I ended up in my doctor's office. And I was sitting with this wonderful woman and she said, so what can we do for you today? And I burst into tears and I couldn't stop crying. It was one of those shoulder shaking, ugly cries.
Those are good ones, though. Those are the needed cries.
Yeah, you know, it's like someone turns on the tap or the faucet, as you call it, and it just is coming out whether you like it or not. And I hadn't really experienced that before either. And, you know, I kind of gathered myself and I said, I'm really sorry. I don't know where that came from. I think I'm just really overwhelmed and burnt out. And, you know, I'll never forget what that kind doctor said. She looked at me with a lot of kindness and she said, me too.
Wow.
I was like, what? She's like, I'm completely burnt out.
Yeah.
I have a load of patients out there. I don't know how I'm going to get through the day. I was like, this is not how I expected the conversation to go. You know, I don't know.
Like, one of us needs to have it together.
Yes.
No, but how powerful for her to do that. I feel like that is the moment where a healer can be the most healing, is when they're right alongside you.
Yes, I know, because it could have gone either way. I could have reported her to the medical board. But what kind of doctor are you? But yeah, but I guess I realized in that moment, you know, this is where we are in the world that we live in, that, you know, even the people who have made it their life's calling to care for others, they're often more burnt out and stressed out than we are. So, you know, after that, that wonderful encounter, I decided, okay, what do you want to do here? Do you want to go back to the way, you know, you used to do things and start reaching for the pints of Guinness again? Is this what we're going to do here? You know, are you actually going to lean into this stuff that you know works? So I booked a teacher training course with a chap called David G in California that evening on my laptop. I'll never forget. I just opened it. I was like, enough of this. And I booked it. And I was just really to hold myself accountable and to deepen my knowledge and really lean into the stuff that I knew worked. I had no intention of becoming a teacher, but I guess that's what happens. You know, I started sharing the information when I came back with friends and family, and then started doing a bit more here and there. And you know, what was lovely is that for years, I felt like I had two sides to my personality. And sometimes we can feel like we have the outer part and the inner part. And sometimes we feel like they don't gel very well. So for me, I had the outward comedian, performer, jazz hands type version of me. But I also was aware that I had this quieter, deeper introvert spiritual side of me that I didn't see how those two things were ever really going to mesh, you know. But it was actually from my teacher, David G., in California, that he was the first person I heard who made spirituality and these ancient teachings funny and fun. And I was like, wow, you can do that. Because I think a lot of the time, that's what I love about your podcast and the way you communicate all the wonderful information that you do is that you don't take the wellness world takes itself very seriously. And when I hear it being presented in a way that's real and fun and laughing at our own foolishness and mistakes, and you know, that's the stuff that really resonated with me. So I guess I just started to open my mind to the idea of maybe there is a way that I could actually use my humor and comedy training to actually communicate something a little bit deeper. And that's what I've been doing for the last, gosh, I guess 6 years or so.
Wow.
How do you incorporate that into stand-up? Because I'm going to go do it.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll give you the kind of the outline of my show and how it works.
Yeah.
I like to share my own experiences, and sometimes they're sort of mildly traumatic with a small T, but there's humor in there if you want to find it.
There's got to be some trauma. You're a comedian.
Exactly. Yes. Right?
We get our stories.
Twisted and broken. But yeah, I mean, there is. They're in the darkness, there's always humor in there, you know. And that in a way allows you to process it yourself as you're reliving these moments, which the temptation would be to go, oh God, I'd never admit that in public. But actually, if you can talk about your own moments of, you know, was I proud that I was bawling my eyes out in a doctor's surgery? Not particularly, but actually, if I can share that story, you know, with people with a bit of humor injected into it, then they might go, God, yeah, actually, I had a moment like that too. And gosh, I guess it is kind of silly when you think about it, you know, and you start to take some of that heaviness out of it, you know.
Yeah.
So I share my own story through essentially stand-up comedy. I have what would be best described maybe as a funny TED talk. So I take people through, in my first show, Mindful, I took people through meditation and busted a lot of myths about it and, you know, put up those images of people in the lotus position on mountaintops, which annoy me because it's not real. You know, it's always a really beautiful woman on the end of a wooden jetty by a lake. That's the other classic one.
Oh, you know, I like that, though.
I always think there's no way that's Ireland, because if it was, that wooden jetty would be so rotten from constant sideways rain that she would have drowned by now. So it's not real, you know. But I think particularly for men, when we, you know, if when we reach for something like that, and we may take the time to Google mindfulness meditation, those are the images that come up.
Yeah.
Right.
And you think, do you know what? I don't live there. I don't look like that person. I can't relate to this. It mustn't be for me. Oh, well, you know, and they go a different direction. So I really do like to bust those images and that essentially marketing behind mindfulness and meditation that is very strong and works for some people. It absolutely does, but not for everybody.
It's a good point. Go ahead.
No, you go.
It's a good point that now that you say it, I never really thought about it, but I do feel like now that you say it, mindfulness is really geared towards women more. Like, I don't feel like, I never even thought about it, I guess, because I'm on the receiving end, so I don't have to think about it. But you're right that you're giving a platform for all these men to say, oh, hey, that's something I'm going through also. I love that.
Well, that actually, that goes to my question too. Sorry, I don't want to cut you off. Finish your response, but I wanted to talk to you specifically about men's response.
Yeah,
to your
work.
Sure. All I was going to say is, I guess the more ways that you can present this stuff, the more people you're going to reach. You know, if it's always aimed at the, you know, the person who's up early on a Saturday morning with a yoga mat under their arm and they're like shimmying down to the class, then that's great. And as we all know, there is no class. They're just actually walking around to make hungover people feel terrible about their lives. That's why they're there.
Yeah. But I kind of want to watch you shimmying on down to your class after I saw that shimmy. I want Dermot with a yoga mat shimmying down the way.
We need that content immediately.
I need that meme, yeah.
Dermot, thank you for saying that, because I have long been suspecting that's what's actually happening, and I appreciate that it's finally out in the open.
It's out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess one of the beautiful things for me out of the experience of doing the live shows and even in the corporate stuff that I do is seeing the amount of men in the audience, because I have always been the guy or the other guy in those rooms where it's literally 98, you know, it's 100 people at a spiritual retreat weekend. it's 98 women and two guys, and you know, one of them may be the teacher. So I know what it's like, and a lot of it is the language used around it, the imagery used around it. And it's not that there's anything wrong with that, and I hope your listeners don't think that I'm, you know, just belittling any of that. It's powerful stuff and it really helps a lot of people. But again, I guess there are some people, and not just men, there's some people who just don't gravitate towards that, I guess, more traditional way that it's been marketed. I don't want to call it fluffy, because again, that sounds like our woo, because it belittles it. It's not what I mean, but it's just presented in a particular way. So if I can tell a bunch of people, you know, primarily men, that, hey, look, these techniques we're about to do, I've shared them with the Irish international rugby team and the women's international football team and soldiers in the Lebanon, they're all doing this. You know, and they're not lighting, you know, scented candles and tapping their dream catchers into the wall. You know, they just want to actually
get
a 3 hours sleep, you know, while the bombs fly either way over their heads, you know. So this is the soldiers, obviously, not the rugby team. That would be quite intense. But, you know, I guess just presenting it to people in ways that maybe they haven't been aware of. You know, they didn't realize that when the rugby team gets into a huddle, they're actually doing one conscious breath. They're trying to take their minds out of the past and the mistakes they may have made, and they're taking their minds out of the future, thinking about stuff that could go wrong. So when you give those types of pieces of information to people, they go, oh, okay, I didn't know that. Okay, I'll give it a go.
Well, Dermot, this makes me wonder. I mean, now you're well known for this, so people know what they're getting when they come to your shows. But what was the response like in the beginning when you started to incorporate this into, you know, people think they're coming to see stand-up comedy and they're getting mindfulness too? What kind of response did you get?
I guess it's mixed. Some people are like, huh? We're doing, you know, because I'd say at the start of the show, you know, this is a show like no other. It's comedy, it's meditation, it's transformation. And there's always some faces go, huh? Hang on a sec. Meditation? I didn't know this. Right. I didn't know we were going to be transformed. I just want to laugh, you know.
Yeah.
But I think the more you do it, the more people become aware of it. You know, I always ask two questions at the start of my shows is, you know, this is comedy, it's meditation, it's transformation. Who is here? Because they're ready to be transformed. And you get like, whoa, yeah, a group of people. Then I say, and who's here? Because they were dragged here by someone who's sick of their shit. And then half the hands go up, because there's always somebody who's like, hey, you need this. You know, the stress, the bag of stress in your life. Who is that person? They get dragged along. So, you know, that's what I love. I have all kinds at my shows. I get, you know, young teenagers to people in their 80s and 90s. I get a pretty much even mix of men and women. I get, you know, students, self-employed people, you know, working at home, moms, whatever it happens to be, a whole lovely mix of people. And I think that's what makes it so exciting. And you meet people after the show go, you know what? I didn't know what to expect. That's what I hear a lot. I didn't know what this was going to be. I just felt like I might need it. And, you know, it really works. And I think there's genuine surprise when people go, I couldn't see how meditation and stand-up comedy was going to work, but it does work. Because I know it does sound like I'm mixing, you know, MMA with flower arranging. How is this going to manifest on stage? But I guess, you know, the humor and comedy is the tool to open up a lot of minds and open up people to maybe to something they haven't tried. And you can see it in the body language of people, you know, who will come in. They've had a tough week. You don't know what stresses they're carrying around with them, what stories, what heaviness they have in their hearts. And you see they've folded their arms and they're tight and they're like, you're not going to get me. You know, you're not going to get through to me with your meditation, you weirdo. And the more you make them laugh, you see their you know, their bodies soften a bit and they open up, and then, you know, okay, they're now open to maybe trying something that they were closed off to before. So that's powerful.
So fascinating. It makes it so much more palatable with the comedy for somebody who is really opposed to the idea of mindfulness. It softens it by making them laugh first.
Yeah.
Well done.
I'm so proud of you. We have a lot of listeners who are listening because they are either in the middle of a life transformation or they crave a life transformation. And, you know, I think a lot of people who consume media and content that is in the spiritual mindfulness space are, you know, among those of us that are like, what, you know, what is my purpose? What am I doing here? How do I have more impact? And as I listen to your story, I think about what a huge leap of faith you had to take to transform what you did in some ways, right? I mean, you're known for this radio show. 20 years is not a short period of time. Can you talk a little bit about how you overcame the voices or the imposter syndrome? You know, the parts of us that want to tell us, no, 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 that's crazy. This is never going to work. Like, how did you navigate that?
You know, you're such a wonderful speaker on intuition, and we've chatted about that before. You know, for me, it was more of a gut feeling. There was like a little civil war happening. And, I don't know, where did I hear that quote? But it was frustration is the doorway to insight. Yes. And some of your listeners may have that feeling right now, whether it's in a relationship or a job or some situation in their life where they just are sort of, something's not right. It's just a discomfort here. It's kind of a frustration of, oh. And it was like there was a civil war happening between my head and my gut. And each, I would get little signals from my gut. I called it my inner potato. Because it felt like a little heaviness in my belly that was just sort of there, just letting me know it's there, you know. And it, for some reason, it materialized as a medium sized spud in my mind. And so I had this little potato telling me, you're ready for a change. Ha 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 ha. You're not going to be doing this very much longer. And my head is like, shut the hell up. This is a great job. I work a half day with my best buddy. We just laugh at each other and get paid really well to do it. Why would I give that up? And it's like, you just are, you know. And I guess intuition is a powerful thing where your gut, when your gut wants to be heard, it will keep sending you little signals. And, you know, I think back in that day when I was breathing into a brown paper bag in the back of an ambulance, you know, I had been trying to cover up every signal that my potato was trying to whisper to me. It was saying, you're taking on too much work. These early morning breakfast shows are not suiting your circadian rhythms. You need to, you know, maybe work on your self-worth, or, you know, look at a few things. And anytime I got a signal, I would just cover it with alcohol. It was generally just, or whatever it happened to be, just trying to dampen it down. So I guess, you know, I over the years became a little bit more attuned to those little signals. And that's what it did. So I, you know, a lot like this, how you talk about it in your book, Maury, that you just start to open your mind to the possibility that maybe you could do something else. And so I just started teaching meditation on the side while I was working in radio. And I got such incredible fulfillment from that. I remember one week in particular, I was doing a show with my co-host, Dave, a stand-up show in an arena with a few other comedians. And this was like my dream to do a show in that place. And I did it, I remember. And I drove away from it going, nah, that was fine. And then 2 days later, I taught meditation to 30 bored insurance workers in a company. And I came out of there like high-fiving the world, like, oh my God, this is what I want to do, you know.
Yeah.
And I remember my agent was standing outside the door and he's like, really? Really? This is it? This is what we're working towards? You know, and even I remember sitting down with my agent and saying, I think I want to be a meditation teacher and I'm going to move into that space. And they were like, what?
Yeah.
But I had to go through that period of frustration and questioning and arguing with myself. And we don't realize in those times that we're actually working stuff out. We're already quite far on that path to change.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to see it when you're in the moment, you know. I know you talk about that when you're talking about, you know, it's elements of phoenixing in that, you know, we are transforming even if we don't realize it. And, you know, maybe it's an overly simple analogy came to me when I was thinking about this the other day was, it's like sometimes in our life we're on one track in the forest, and it we know that there's another one that we would rather be on, and certainly our gut is telling us that maybe that's what we could try. But to get to that other path, we've got to get through all the brambles and the branches and the icky, uncomfortable stuff. But eventually you will find yourself on that other path. So I guess, you know, it a lot of people thought it was strange. Some people still think it's strange. But in a weird way, I don't think it is too strange for me. When I looked at why I was doing the things I was doing and the why of the radio and... you know, how powerful those exercises, as you know, of just sitting down and going, what's important to me? What are my values around work and the kind of things that I want to do? And I'd never done those exercises before. They all sounded very self-help booky, but actually when you sit down to do them, they're super practical. And you're like, what is a value? I don't even know what that is. And it's like, the things that are important to me, just write them down. You know, so it was like helping people to feel better. That was obviously a thing that I just wanted. I've always liked helping people to feel better. And it was always the mission of the radio show was, we want to leave people feeling happier at the end than they were at the start. That was the goal. Yeah. So I still see myself doing the same thing. I just do it in a different way. And once I realized that, I was like, well, then it isn't such a massive pivot. It can seem like that from the outside, but actually the values and the goal with my work is still very aligned to what I used to do. It's just slightly doing it in a different way.
Yeah. You too. The two of you complement each other. You tell us about your book. Is it similar to Higher Self?
Yes. That's what I want to talk about. Good question.
Message. Yeah. Your message together is so aligned and beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Dermot, cause we talked about it, but I so relate to this notion that like, I'm using the same skills as a crisis manager to teach people to listen to their intuition, which is what taught me about purpose. It's like, oh, your purpose is your purpose. It doesn't matter what you're doing. You could do your purpose in a million different ways. When you have a gift, you can apply that gift in multiple ways. So tell us how Busy and Wrecked is helping to further that purpose. Tell us about the book and what can we expect from it when we read it?
Yeah, well, Busy and Wrecked is... for those of you who can see this on the video,
I'm very excited.
It's just coming out. Busy and Wrecked, I don't know if you use wrecked in the same way that we do here for, you know, if you're exhausted, that's how we would use. You'd use the same? Okay. They're the two words that I've heard the most from people since I started teaching meditation. When I'd be with a group and people will come up to me after it, they'd say, oh my God, I'm busy and wrecked. And I noticed there was a shift in how people were having conversations. You know, you would ask the question, how are you? And the answer would be, fine, thank you. How are you? And I noticed that now it's, how are you? And it's, oh my God, don't talk to me, crazy busy. I am up the walls. I am all over the place. I'm chasing my tail. I'm here, there and everywhere. You know, I'm out the door. I'm flat out, as we say here in Ireland. And then there would usually be a little gap as we kind of, you know, realize that actually that sounds completely unhinged and we have no time management skills and we can't say no to anything. So then I noticed that people were using that phrase, but you know, good busy. And good busy seems to be this way of papering over the cracks of explaining away the fact that we're, you know, on the verge of a nervous breakdown by somehow suggesting that, well, you see, all this stuff is crazy and the pace is kind of out of control, but I chose it all, so it must be fine. It's good busy, you know, and you're like, really? Yeah. And it's like, yep, I have a heart rate of 175 and I haven't put my kids to bed in 4.5 weeks. And I was so exhausted this morning, I called the bus driver mommy. But, you know, good busy. I noticed that this was a lot of the language that we're using these days. So I just became really curious about it. So the book is an exploration of why we're going around telling each other that we're super busy, up the walls, crazy busy, chasing our tails, but good busy. Why we feel overwhelmed, why some of us are crying in our doctor's office, you know, and what I found out through a year's research of busyness was that a lot of it isn't our fault. There actually is a change in the way that we're speaking. And it's not just our perception of it. It's there's a lot of science that's come out of Columbia Business School in the States, as a woman called Sylvia Bellezzo has done a lot of study on this. And what they found is that we are indeed engaged in constant busyness signaling to each other. And we like to signal that we have little time for our personal lives, and you know, we work lots, and the more time that we can demonstrate we spend working, and the more time we can demonstrate that we have for our kids, the higher social status we give ourselves. And that's really interesting, because it's never been like that all throughout history. The more wealthy and more successful you were, the less you worked. That was it, you know. Do you get that show Downton Abbey in the States? There's a character in that called Violet Crawley, and she asks the famous question, what's a weekend? Because you know, literally the leisure class had no idea what a weekend was, you know. This was 100 years ago, and because every day was the same, they didn't work, other people did. But actually they reckon in the early 70s in America that started to change, that for the first time the top 10% started to work longer hours than the bottom 10% of society. And it had never been, there was a shift. And, you know, I don't think in Ireland in the early 70s, we were quite there yet. I know at the time we were actually protesting in the early 70s outside our government buildings about the reduction of the drink drive limit to 12 pints.
Oh my gosh.
They were bringing it down to 12. And there were protests. They were clanging the gates saying, this is unacceptable. What is this? Tuesday? You know.
Y'all have your priorities straight.
But look, we did catch up with the rest of the world eventually. But so I guess the book is an exploration of busyness. It's a reassuring message to people that a lot of our overwhelm is not your fault. It's the way the world is set up, or the demands on our nervous systems have never been like this before. So it's no wonder we feel frayed around the edges sometimes. And also then I have my deep space toolkit in there that I share to help people to step out from busyness and to maybe become aware of some of our behaviors that do contribute to our busyness. And there's free guided meditations in there as well, audio meditations. So there's lots on offer, but I find it a fascinating time to be alive to the way the world is at the moment, and how wonderfully resilient we are to navigate all these crazy changes going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I can't wait to read.
Yeah, we are going to run and order this book immediately. We want to ask you, can you do us a slight favor before we let you go? You've been so generous with your time. Could you ground us in a little bit of mindfulness before we leave you today? Is there any little tool or way that we can just take a moment and become present before we say goodbye?
I would be honored. And your dog is obviously also honored to be part of it.
You need to relax a little.
Yeah.
Mine is running around the garden outside where I am right now, constantly trying to kill our neighbors. He just keeps flinging himself at the wall, and all they see is the top of his head going, rah, rah, rah. Yeah, I wouldn't mind, but he's like a weird Jack Russell mix of 1,000 dogs. And he's the friendliest dog in the world once you get close, but he really is obsessing about our neighbors. I don't know what he thinks they do behind the wall.
He's sensing some weird energy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think what I'd love to do maybe is one that's along the lines of the book. And for any of your listeners who maybe have been having a hard day or a hard week and just feel that they're carrying some stuff. So maybe for the next minute, all I'd ask is that if we could put one hand on the belly, okay? It's a nice place to start, to come out of our heads and just put one hand on the belly. I find this works best if you put your hand on your own belly. This is...
Damn.
I'll have to move there.
It could be the start of something beautiful. Who knows? So all I want you to do is just imagine that there's a balloon in your belly. And when you breathe in through your nose, you inflate that balloon. And we hold it in there for a moment. And then we let go. And as we do that, we soften our shoulders and we relax our jaw and we breathe into our belly one more time. And we hold and then we let go. Beautiful. And for the last few seconds of this little mini meditation, I'd like you just to think of the two words, let go. And so we're going to invite an opportunity in to just let go of any things that we've been carrying around, any tension, any stresses, any anxieties, maybe any heaviness that's hanging around your heart at the moment. And what we're going to do is we're going to just silently repeat let go in our mind. And when we breathe in, we're going to silently say let. And when we breathe out, we're silently going to say go. And you can even imagine that each time you say go, that stress and tension and worries or heaviness are literally just running down your arms. You can let your hands drop down by your sides and imagine all that stress and tension is just dripping down, out your fingertips down into the floor. Let go. Let go. Beautiful. And we lock it in with another nice deep belly breath. We hold and then we're going to sigh this one out. Let go.
Wow.
And we're back. And now that you're all nice and relaxed, I'd love you to give me your bank details. Just give me your...
You want my social security number as well? No problem.
That's it. Just let go of all that heavy financial information. Just give it to me. Swift codes, IBANs, the whole lot. Guys, thank you.
Dermot, so effective, so simple and practical and effective, and you still managed to make us laugh. Dermot, this was such a delight, and I have to say, you guys, run out and get busy and wrecked. I mean, as you can hear in Dermot's voice and in his teachings, he has so much to share, but in such an accessible way that also invites in joy. So run out and get busy and wrecked. Dermot, where else can people find you if they want to stay connected?
DermotWhelan.com. That's DermotWhelan. DermotWhelan.com. And I'm Dermot Whelan Official on Instagram.
Amazing. We'll link to all of that in our show notes.
Thank you so much. You're very kind. Thank you. Keep up the amazing work, Maureen Melissa. It's just been a really, really gorgeous opportunity to meet you both. And keep doing what you're doing. It's fantastic.
You too. Yes, thank you, Dermot. Come back and talk to us soon. Guys, this has been another amazing episode of Signal. Tune in next week for another episode. And Dermot, thank you again. Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Bushka, and is edited by our sound editor, Josie Barak. Stay tuned next week for another episode.